Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again, after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please!
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by Sheen.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Hey guys, it's your favorite sisters with the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. On the show, you'll hear caregivers confessing the good, the bad, and the completely unexpected. You're guaranteed to relate, be inspired, leave with helpful tips and resources, and of course, laugh. Now, let's jump right in to today's guest confession. Hey, Jay.
Why, hello, Natalie.
You know what it feels... Well, you know what would be the best thing to do today?
Get a massage.
No, I want to talk to Julia.
You asked. What was your answer? I'm sorry, I heard.
I want to talk to Julia.
Oh, okay. Because yes,
we have a guest.
Yes,
we have a guest today. And so we're coming to you guys from the brand new studio from PBS Appalachia.
Thank you. So we don't get any unfam.
Yeah, we've been talking about how to say it. Is it Appalachia? Is it Appalachia? I'm going to tell you right now, I use it interchangeably depending on, and I'm from Tennessee, and all my Virginia friends are going to be like, if you don't say Appalachia, we're going to be really mad. Oh, mm-hmm. Even our guest is nodding her head at this moment. I'm like, I think you're a northerner. Like, you're not even going to vote on this. She's nodding her head. She's like, yeah, I do. So we're so excited. We're telling everybody, we're here recording in the new PBS studio in the Hard Rock Bristol, and we have a clear screen. I've been watching everybody. Like, if you're watching us on YouTube, which I encourage you to watch us on YouTube, we've got a brand new set. Mm-hmm. We're not at the podcast. We're in chairs and we're comfy and it feels good.
We did our hair.
And we put clothes on.
It
wasn't just like in sweatpants because nobody could see it. It's
exactly
perfect.
Exactly.
So we're so happy to be here. And also, I wanted to give a shout out. We've got a brand new sponsor. In addition to Care Forward, we also have Care Scout, who is a brand new sponsor. We'll make sure everybody has information about them. Mm-hmm. And definitely look them up. They are able to help support with identifying resources for home health. And so I'm really grateful to have Care Scout as part of our newest sponsor. Mm-hmm. So, Jay, I think it's time to jump right in.
Let's jump in.
Yeah, we didn't even sing. And we've recorded two episodes. And I haven't sang once today.
I know. I kind of shut that down.
Let's get it started.
Let's be serious. This is caregiving, right? You have to be serious.
Ready?
No, you don't have to be serious.
I didn't think so.
Okay. Today, we have with us Julia Mayer. Now, we have heard one side of this story.
Oh, somewhat, we have.
Because we had her husband, Barry Jacobs.
We love him.
With us. I
love Barry Jacobs.
You know what? He was the kickoff. I believe he was the kickoff episode for 2024.
He was.
Yeah,
I believe he was.
But now we're getting...
We get the other side. This is like the he said, she said. Remember that movie, He Said, She Said? It was such a cute movie.
I did my voice, the other side of the story.
Well, this is... I don't know what this deep voice is.
I was trying to do it, but I don't have... I got to finish telling this. So, first of all, I told Julia already, I love to get someone who's had caregiving experience.
Yeah.
And they actually are a professional, not caregiver, but a professional... She's a clinical psychologist. And so
she's she's totally bad.
Like she absolutely is a professional. She knows how to do this. She has not messed up once. She handled it with grace and style.
She's laughing.
She is like a figure skater that does the perfect
triple Lutz.
Yes.
Not a triple Lutz.
That's definitely as she giggles when we see her on the screen, she may tell us that she might have had a couple of errors. So, but let me tell you a little bit about her. So her caregiving experience is really interesting. She took care of her father and Barry's mother and stepfather. So her father, the experience with him is that her mother passed away unexpectedly.
Wait, don't give away all the details.
Okay, but I want to say that because that was kind of like our story.
Oh,
and
sure.
Then she started caring for him. And she also had siblings that she worked with.
We love that she has siblings.
I know. So then, as a good wife, she also cared for Barry's parents.
Mother.
Yeah, mother and stepfather.
And stepdad.
So I'm like, she is like
Jack. So you're over here on the struggle bus on the intro.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I know, because it's such a crazy story. I'm like, she's caring for all these people, and she's perfect because, you know.
Well, and she's, and this is the other thing. I mean, she's a clinical psychologist. Yeah. She's working, too, and doing all these amazing things.
So, we just got to get started. Tell us the story, Julia. I mean, first of all, tell us.
How about you let me start? Because you're discombobulated right now. Okay, Julia, I always like to say, let's start from the beginning. You were born, but tell us about your background. Bring us up to you met Barry. Like, bring us up. Give us some background so we know a little bit more about you.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me. And I am happy to give you the other side of the story here. I met Barry in graduate school. He was a year ahead of me. And that's just the beginning of the dream. And then, you know, we got married, we had kids. And by the time my mother passed away suddenly and I was helping to care for my dad, our kids were teenagers. Mm. We were taking care of our kids. We were that sandwich generation, the kids and then the parents.
Wait, I'm going to time you out because you skipped over some of the most important parts. Tell us about you and your family. Like, tell us, give me the background of your family. Like, you're from this area. You are, like, you're one
We're
of
the missing
siblings.
That.
Like, you just jumped right into Barry. Like, you were born and then there was Barry. And they're like, I'm just going to forget all the middle part.
Because we know you have siblings.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm from New York.
Yes.
And probably why I speak quickly. But I've been in Pennsylvania for many, many years.
Yeah.
I do have three siblings, an older brother, younger sister, younger brother.
Okay.
And, you know, your typical childhood. I went away to college and moved on from there. And when I am going to jump ahead a little bit.
Right ahead. Go ahead.
My mother passed away. At that time, my older brother was still in New York where my parents were, where my dad was still living. But I had a brother in California and a sister in New Jersey who had very young children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I had the teenagers, so my older brother and I did most of the care.
Yeah.
But my brother lived 45 minutes from my dad, and of course, he was working full-time. I was working full-time.
Mm-hmm.
And what we came up with was he would do the bulk of the care, and then every other weekend on Friday night or Friday afternoon, I would drive the 3 hours to my dad's and give my brother a weekend off.
Wow.
So every other weekend, I was in New York. Taking care of my dad.
Any experience as you're growing up, like did you have grandparents or aunts and uncles that you all cared for? Or was this something new that you were like, okay, my mom has passed away and we have to step in because she was full-time caregiver for your dad?
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, even before that, I want to back up a little bit because you in your notes that you sent to us, you said, my mom was my dad's primary caregiver. So let's kind of actually back up and set the stage so that people know that this caregiving really did happen in a crisis. And because I want to reset a little bit because we got really forward and I'm like, I don't think I know well enough about what happened before. So your mom was caring for your dad, but why was your mom caring for your dad?
My dad had vascular dementia and kidney disease and diabetes, and he was really smart.
Mm-hmm.
He was a doctor, so he never got medical care. That's how it works.
Yeah.
and so he probably didn't have to be as bad off as he was, but and she was an attorney, actually. And both of them had semi-retired. So they had a big retirement party and then they both continued to work, but maybe a little bit less.
Yeah.
And he started to have small strokes and TIAs and she started to get to the point where she was worried about leaving him alone.
Mm-hmm.
So some weekends when she was caring for him where my sister and I would, you know, kidnap her and have my brother step in for the weekend, and we would take her to Atlantic City or something so that she could have a little time off.
Oh, so you were caring for your mom too. You and your siblings were helping to be, we call that caregivers for caregivers. Because I mean, I know you, your face was like, well, sort of. And I'm like, no, I really think you should call for what you were doing. And it, you know, because caregiving is varying levels of interaction. And it's not just of, you know, doing, helping with the activities of daily living or just taking to doctor's appointments or medicine. A lot of times, and this is something I think that's so important, caregivers need caregivers too. And so I think those trips not only helped reinforce your all's relationship, but also provided that respite that she probably needed to help her keep going. And I think that's, and it sounds, and you're, and it sounds like a team sport, team activity.
Exactly.
So I think that sounds, that's important. And so when your mom passed unexpectedly, did you and your family, because your dad got sick and he had this diagnosis, did you and the family have any conversations, or did your parents tell you, this is what your dad and I have decided to do? We know that you're like, because for us, with us, my mom and dad had decided my mom was going to pass first, and God did not align with that. And so he was like, no, hold on a second. You think you're in control? That's cute. And so we never had conversations around care. We never had conversations around finances. We never had conversations about what the plan was and what their wishes were for them. And so that's why I think that's why I wanted to back us up to say, let's go into that.
We never had those conversations either. But when my mother was going into the hospital for heart valve replacement and bypass surgery, and I just want to say the caregiver often gets sick too.
Yes,
You know, we can't forget that. And she was having her own health problems, and she was ignoring them also because she was caring for him. We got her to, you know, a surgeon, and she really needed the surgery. She was having trouble breathing and walking more than 10 paces. So she had this heart valve surgery and this bypass surgery. And we were, as a team, except for my brother in California, the rest of us were ready to step in and rotate care for her and my dad. And that was the plan for her recovery. But 3 days after her surgery, she had this rare side effect from the bypass machine called hemorrhagic pancreatitis. And that was it for her. So we
Wow.
were completely left unprepared. And my dad was not functional losing her. They had met, he was 17 and she was 16, and they had been married. I mean, they were in their 70s. So,
Wow. They were a 50-year kind of relationship, long-term relationship. That is, and that's so painful because, you know, you guys didn't expect this to happen, and I don't think anyone expects it to happen, but when you have one parent that is caring for another parent with a significant illness, that is different than everybody was just running concurrently and being okay, and this is how we were living sort of idea. So you guys are trying to grieve, and also now you're in charge. And so you and your siblings, was what happened at that point with you and your siblings in the sense of, we're going to have to do this thing, and also, holy crap, we've got to take care of dad, because we had that conversation. Holy crap, we've got to take care of mom, and how are we going to do this?
And it was traumatic how my mother died too. So traumatized, we were overwhelmed, trying to grieve, trying to support my dad. My dad became kind of non-functional, and so we had to do everything. Luckily, there were four of us. So my older brother, I would have to say, really did the bulk of the planning. He and I together did a lot. We ended up being co-executors of their wills, and my dad was a wonderful person. I mean, he really was. He only lasted about 15 months after her because he really couldn't exist without her. He became very depressed. But he was really cooperative. So there came a time where we had to take his car from him because even though my mother would say to me privately, "I hate when dad drives," he let him. She'd be and then she died. And then we're like, okay, we have to get the car from dad. My older brother Just disconnected the battery, thinking, oh, he'll try to start the car and it won't start and he'll give up. But no, he called his mechanic to come over and look at and plugged it in again. So it was my turn. All three siblings are like, okay, Julie, you better, you it's your turn. So it was horrible. I sat down with him and I said, we have to talk about the car. And I was ready for him to resist. And he said, I've been thinking about it. I'd like to give your daughter, she's 16, I'd like to give her that car.
Oh, I love that. It gives back dignity and
Making that
control.
decision. Making that
Like he
decision.
knew.
Yeah.
All I could do was say, thank you. That's so generous. That's so, it was an old Buick. It was perfect for, teenagers.
A 16-year-old, exactly.
Honestly, we had our own first cars that,
Yeah.
you could run into the side of the bridge and it wouldn't dent.
Yeah.
That's what a Buick is.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you said, and when I hear that, your dad lasted 15 months because they truly were together for so long. I know that in that time as well, at what point did, you've got that correlating story of Barry's stepfather and his mom. When does that kind of jump in with the story as well? Like, where is
Is that
that?
running concurrently as
Yeah.
well,
Yeah.
or did you, it was really supporting you? And what I hear you saying is, I supported my brother, who was my dad's primary caregiver, and by providing relief on the weekends, this is how me and my other sibling would do that, which I think is great because that your role in that was very similar to how Emily and I try to support Jay as the primary. Because it's fine to have a primary and it's okay if it's not you. But what can you do as a sibling, as a friend, as a family member, as another human being to support the primary? I think that's so important.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I will answer your question, but I wanted to add my younger siblings, I kind of coordinated them. So there were times where my sister could get over to see my dad. She was only an hour and a half away, so she could leave her kids with her husband or whatever and spend some time. So we coordinated, and my brother in California would come out every couple months.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so somehow we had it covered, even though my older brother still did the bulk of it.
Yeah.
But what happened was when my father finally did pass away, and then we were grieving him, we also felt some relief. This was not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's typical. Lots of people feel relief as well as sadness. We're just humans. And then I was thinking, okay, we can focus on our kids. We're all good. Take care of my parents. My parents are, done. 6 months later, we get a call from Barry's mom, and she says, can you send me $30,000?
Holy cow.
I think that's out of the
I want to hold, I'm going to take a
Hold
break
on a
on,
second.
can you send me $30,000? Because that is the
That's the
perfect
break
spot
moment. Hold
to
on.
take a break. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals go wild. Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So we are back and we're here with Julia Mayer, and Natalie and I are so excited to be back. So your father has passed away. You and your siblings have been taking care of him for a year and a half, and you've had a 6 month reprieve from caregiving, and something triggers, and Barry's mother calls and says, pick it up there, Julia.
I need $30,000. Can you send me $30,000?
Okay. That's not like a $20 bill.
Yeah.
Like, just send 30.
Yeah.
What we knew, and I will backtrack a little bit on this
Yeah,
one,
go ahead.
about a year and a quarter earlier, we had been down there. They lived in Florida. They lived in Florida in this gorgeous gated community where the hedges are at right angles and everyone drives a Mercedes.
Yeah.
And they traveled the world. These are not people who sat at home. And then my mother-in-law's husband, Gene and Steve was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And so we were visiting them, and I was taking a walk with Gene, and we were just chatting, and I said, "Look, I know Steve has Alzheimer's, and you know how that goes. It's going to get worse. We're here for you. You know, if you would move up near us, we would be happy to take care of you. You know, that's we want to."
Yeah.
And in response, she said to me, "I'd rather live in the gutter."
Joya, you just seemed like you filled you filled the space between to try to help soften the edges, it feels like. And I also want to say, you also had children still. How old were your children at the time?
Oh, they were teenagers. So my daughter is applying to college. My son is 3 years younger. So jump to the 6 months after my father dies. My family's still grieving. You know, we're still grieving my mother too, because
Absolutely.
everything had happened so quickly.
Right.
And we get this call asking for $30,000. And Barry says to me, "I don't know what to do." And I said, "Well, we could send them $30,000, or we could light it on fire and it would have the same outcome."
That's right.
So he said, "Mom, I can't do that." And she got very angry at
Of
him
course.
because, but what we discovered starting with that phone call was that they were bankrupt.
Wow.
So we had to intervene. Barry flew down to Florida and basically got the bankruptcy going. They lost their home. They had to give their car back. And with this kind of bankruptcy, I'm not an expert, but you can only take $10,000 worth of stuff.
Wow.
Took some furniture and her television, and I raced around up here in Pennsylvania to find them an apartment to live in. And because her husband had Alzheimer's, I was worried about renting. Because, you know, with Alzheimer's progressing, I was afraid they'd get kicked out of their apartment if he was yelling. So I bought a place in a beautiful building a mile from us. That I live in a little tiny town, and this building is very popular. It has a beautiful lobby. It has a pool. It has meeting rooms. It has a van that takes people to doctor's appointments and to the supermarket.
Oh, that's like almost sounds like a hybrid assisted living.
But it's just a condo. It's just a really nice, high quality
Oh, that
with
reminds me of
wow.
Louise
I
Thompson
would
and
that
her
is
parents. That's like Louise Thompson in the UK
that
and her
is
parents.
much higher than the gutter. So kudos, Julia.
Julia found the
Wow,
gutter and added some
that is
gutter
really
guard
nice.
to
So moving on, that is high class
Wow.
gutter.
I want
So
Julia to be my caregiver
I
as well.
know.
Okay, keep
So
going.
go keep going.
So we moved them up, and you know, it was an ordeal. It was not easy.
Yeah.
And they were very upset. They did not want to move. They wanted to keep living their life, but they ran out of money. And like I said, they had lived high on the hog, and they were paying the price, I guess. But
Yeah.
so we moved them into this apartment. And Barry has three cousins, my mother-in-law's three nieces, who she, I think, preferred to her two sons, or at least the one
Yeah.
son.
Yeah.
And so she was telling them over the phone within the first few days of living in the apartment that we had put her in a tenement.
I'm not sure she knows what century she lives in right now,
Yeah.
because like she's acting like she's one of the serfs.
Yeah.
So
So, you know, it is a nice apartment.
yeah.
It's a nice apartment, and I tried to make it as nice as possible. So every step of the way, she was very challenging. I would have them over to dinner, and I'd make this whole big meal. They had both lost weight in Florida, I think, because of their stress.
Yeah.
So I'd eat all this food, knowing I wanted to send some home with them. And they would sit down at the table with my kids too, and Barry, and say, "We're not hungry." And so at first, I didn't know what to do. And then I had this idea that I would just make up plates like they were in a restaurant and put
Yeah.
them in front of them. And when I put the plates down in front of them, they ate.
Huh.
And then I would pack up the food to have them take back to their apartment, and they would fight me on that. "We don't want the leftovers. We don't eat leftovers. We don't want that." And I would drive them back and put it in the refrigerator, and it also would get eaten.
I was afraid she was going to say she delivered it like Uber, and I was coming to get you, Julia. I was like, you have just overstepped. So, wow. So you are almost, and I know this, you know, you have this psychology background, but you're almost playing to whatever you have to do to help them. I want to know in all of this, so you are doing this. Are you doing it to keep the peace? Like, is this helping Barry? Because I know that relationship is hard. And what is your purpose in doing this? What is your mindset? And how is it impacting you?
So multiple purpose. I definitely wanted to support Barry. Mm-hmm. I wanted to help him. And I knew that his relationship with both his mother and his stepfather was fraught, difficult.
Yeah.
And it was less difficult for me, although my long history with my mother-in-law was that when Barry and I were first together, she wanted to get dirt from me about him. Like, she wanted me to complain about him to her. And I didn't have anything to complain about. He is a great guy.
Yeah. I really like Barry too.
I do.
But she, I guess, felt like that's how we were going to bond. And because I wouldn't do it, we didn't bond. So We really didn't, we hardly knew each other. We did not have a good relationship that was close, but there was no hostility.
Yeah.
It was just sort of, I was her grandchildren's mom.
There you go. Yeah. Mm.
So how is this, from your perspective, impacting your relationship, your career? Because they live a mile away. You've got ungrateful party of one, because really, I don't know that Steve is existing at this point. I mean, he's the one that is sick at the moment, in the sense of sick with Alzheimer's. And so you guys are trying to manage, raise children, and, how is it affecting you personally?
It definitely did. So I wanted to help Barry, but I also just have a very strong feeling of, I like to help people. I do it for a living. Yeah. And I wanted to, as difficult as my in-laws were, I felt like it was the right thing to do. And I wanted to do the right thing. And I wanted to model for my kids. It is what you do with your family. Even when they're rude to your face, you just do it.
Yeah.
But it was really stressful, very stressful. And I think Barry said this in his podcast with you. We would talk to each other, you know, we would sort of bring each other down. Like, one of us would go over there to do something and come back and be like raging, and the other one would listen and talk them down. Or, you know, there were times where my mother-in-law, she had snuck all her jewelry up here.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, of course.
She was busy selling it secretly and getting cash and then spending the cash on. She had a shopping addiction. So she was busy spending her cash on all kinds of things she didn't need. Meanwhile, we had bought her an apartment. We had two kids that had to go to college soon.
Yeah.
It was just very stressful, and we did not want her to waste her money.
Right.
But she was busy taking herself out to lunch in our little town and getting to know everyone in the town. I think bad-mouthing Barry and I to everyone in the town.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So she, one day, so we decided that we had this babysitter for our kids for years. Mm-hmm. We decided, wouldn't it be great if she could help out with Jean and Steve? And she did. And then after we had to put Steve in a nursing home, she helped out with Jean, and they became best buds. And she became her accomplice, where they would rush to the jewelry store together to sell her jewelry.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. I was thinking that was going to be you.
I was thinking it was going to be
an advocate for you, like giving you the download.
We went totally sideways. We went right on that one.
Well, you were trying.
God bless you. This is the moment where it's like, no good deed goes unpunished.
And it really took me by surprise, because I would have these conversations with her. Oh, you know, we're trying to keep Jean from spending too much money. You know, how about you don't go out to lunch? You know, the two of you could have what's in the house. And she would nod. Yeah, she would yes me. And then they would be out having lunch and spending money that, you know.
Who was paying for this service? Just curious, asking, already know the answer.
So what happened was, the three nieces who heard about the tenement decided that they wanted to pay for a cleaning lady to come. And I thought, well, why don't we merge these two things? We could have the babysitter get paid and do the cleaning.
Oh, good.
And also spend the time with Jean and, you know, be her entertainment and take her around.
Yeah.
And so they would send a check once a month to cover the cleaning lady expenses. And I was on Jean's bank account. Thank goodness I managed to do that. And so one day I was looking at it and the money went in and then the money went out. And I said to Jean when I saw her next, "What happened to the check your niece has sent? It's gone." And she said, "There was a bank robbery." I said, "You know, we live in a tiny town with one bank, and I would know, I think, if there was a bank robbery." I like,
you're just kind of like, that sounds like my mom's done something bad, and she just kind of looks off and blames it on something. You're like, I think so.
Sometimes my husband and I have the best conversations. Like, you're just laying there in bed, like, right before you're getting ready to go to sleep. Is that something you and Barry are laughing about? Like, "Hey, your mom told me the bank was robbed today. Okay, I'll see you in the morning." Like, is that a bedtime conversation? I'm just curious.
Well, at the time, I mean, it is. I look back and there's a lot of things to laugh
at. Oh, exactly. Because there's right a lot there. Of times you just want to cuss or cry.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
We got cuss, cry, and then we get to the laughter point.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's last.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mind that it happened, I think I was in stages 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And so I said to her, "You really want me to believe that there was a bank, that the bank was stolen? Are you lying to me, to my face?" And she said, "No.
Wow.
There was somebody passing fake $10 bills." And you know, lies, they go on and on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The
biggest fish in the story. The biggest fish in the world. I'm telling you. So what changes? Because you guys are doing this for a window of time. You said this, your caregiving kind of experience lasted over a 9-year window because it was a combination of supporting your dad and then Barry's parents.
Right.
God bless you. I feel like, you know, it's almost like, what is that book? That's like
Saint
9 years. Yeah, I know. Yes. She is Saint Julia. And this is why we loved you in the podcast. We were like, we love Julia. And we knew we wanted to hear your side. And so you're doing this. You and Barry are both working, because I think this is the thing. Barry's also a clinical psychologist.
Yes.
He is, both of these folks are successful individuals. They're out doing, they're working at the same time. And there's bank robberies going on. And so, go
ahead. I
have
a question. But you, and I want, this is important. At the time, because you guys are huge advocates.
Yes.
For caregivers, the articles and the books and things like that. Were you advocating at that time, or is this the push
that pushed was like, you into wait, the, we're in?
Were you telling people at that time, were you in that caregiving space?
So Barry was more than me.
Uh-huh.
He had written a book on caregiving, really because of his childhood situation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But as we were doing the caregiving, our kids, you know, ended up graduating, going to college. Mm-hmm. And then we had this opportunity to write a book on caregiving together. Barry's mother was still around.
Yeah.
So we could use our current experiences.
There's nothing like a little lived experience. We got to take a second break. And I want to go in, because there's going to be a transition too. So let's take a break. We'll be right back.
All right.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, everybody, we are back here with Julia Mayer. And I just want to say, I like the stages that you said, which is there was cursing, crying, and then laughter. So we've gotten into a little laughter. There was a moment there when we were cursing and crying. The story is amazing.
Yeah.
So we're in another stage now.
So we're in another stage. So you're evolving and you're getting in, and Barry was the first lead into caregiving. And, as far as like writing articles and things like that, and I'm sure that was probably therapeutic for him as well. And just trying to manage that relationship with his mom. So Steve passes, and now it's just Jean.
Right.
God bless us. It's just Jean. So
in the apartment, this is actually where all the financial stuff really starts happening.
Yeah.
Like, came to me about the money, and she starts to decline because she also has vascular dementia.
Wow. Yeah.
So we have her in the apartment. We're starting thank goodness she had long-term care insurance because she really had money.
Good.
So we were able to get aides in addition to the babysitter who continued to see her weekly, whatever.
No boundaries.
We had the aides coming in, and we were spending more and more time there. And we set up a system that really worked well. You know, we had a notebook, which I highly recommend to people, so that when the aides would be done with their shift, they could sort of write a paragraph about how it went. And the next aide could come in, or if one of us was coming in, we could see what was going on because Jean stopped being a very good reporter about what was happening. She would have a fall and not want to tell us. And I'd see her arm was all black and blue, and I'd say, "What happened?" "Nothing."
Of course.
I don't know.
Well, you
So.
know, was she combative? And I don't mean combative like physically, but do you, I think really was she just, did she remain, did there feel like there was an ounce of gratitude, or did everything feel like a fight for throughout this caregiving experience? Because I think this is so important. Most people are like, oh, well, you know, we had a hard time, but what would you assess that to be?
It was tough. A lot of the time she was combative. She lost a lot and she had a hard life. Her husband before Steve died of a brain tumor. She was a single mom. She was rushing and she married, rushing around, managing everything. She married Steve. Steve had his issues. Probably had a drinking problem. He had PTSD from fighting in Korea and he was a different guy. He had a lot of depression and she babied him. I think she didn't get out of life what she really was hoping for. When they were living in that community in Florida and traveling the world, I think she was living her dream. It's just not what it should have been because she really didn't have the money to live that dream. But she did for a while. But then, you know, it felt like I think a major step down to move up near us. And she was unhappy. So a lot of the time she would push back, and especially with Barry. So one day I was looking at her pill box, just as an example, and I noticed that the pills were in all wrong. All the pink ones were in one box and the yellow ones were all in another box. And suddenly the pill box was set up by color, which was not how the pills should be taken. And I said to her, this is not how the pills should be. And Barry said, "We're going to take over your pill box." And she said, "No, I can still do it. You know, don't take everything away from me like I'm a child, you know." And so I said to her, "You know, it would really make me feel less worried if you let me do it. If I could do it, it would make me feel good." And because I said it like that, she was okay with it. So then we started managing her pill box. So there were things like that. She wasn't a monster, but she was a very
No, and I think that's the thing, is that when you have, I go back to that, you were that bridge between her and Barry in that relationship. That was a relationship struggle from a long time ago. That was just, it was just, it was not what he probably, it was not what he probably hoped for. It was probably not what she hoped for, but it was what she was able to give. I want to ask, let's jump through a couple of questions. 'Cause again, like I said, we got this great professional here. And so I think, and I jotted down a couple of things here. You know, I want to talk about advice that you would give. What would be like the top three things that you would tell caregivers to say, these are the things that I would advise you to do? And it doesn't have to be in a category. Top three things you're like, if you do anything, do these three things.
Okay. Shorthand, because I could talk about each of them forever,
Yeah,
but
I know.
the first one is do your best to not take their suffering personally and absorb it yourself. It's their suffering. You see it, you honor it, but it doesn't mean, even when it comes out at you don't have to take it in. You can do that thing that therapists do, which is it seems like you're really upset. You don't have to absorb it. The second thing is always remember to be empathic and compassionate, even when you're really angry at them, even when they've disappointed you or frustrated you extensively. Remember that these are people who are suffering, and like you were describing with regard to your mom, so much loss, so much that they were proud of, that was part of the identity that they don't have anymore, and it hurts them. And yeah, one way that they act it out is with aggression, and you just try to respond with compassion. Yeah. And the third and most important thing is, if you're a caregiver, get support.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah,
people
absolutely.
To talk to, people to share with, people who understand what you are dealing with.
Yeah. You know, one of my questions is always about preserving relationships, and it's not necessarily with the person you're caring for, because my relationships, and it even is with Natalie and Emily, my husband, my kids, my stepkids. How you got 9 years, you're with Barry, you got your kids. Tell me about preserving your relationships. How do you do that?
Husband and kids.
Husband, kids, your siblings. How are you preserving your people?
The key is communication. Always talk about it. Bring up the difficult things, mm-hmm. and just have the conversation. I had to confront my siblings on some things that were happening that weren't so good. and I had to say to my younger brother, you need to call dad, you need to make some trips out, or you will regret it later, because he was sort of avoiding the situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Barry's brother, same thing. He was avoiding the situation, and we really had to push him to get it. So, you know, there's just that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I, how did you, what were the little things, because what were the things that you did to preserve your family, Barry, the kids, because again, they were so younger, or in high school, and over these years, and they went into college. How did you protect your family unit? Does that make sense?
How'd you keep them together?
Yeah.
Like, how'd you keep your family?
So same thing, communication. Mm-hmm. So my kids would help out when they were home with my mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. My mother-in-law adored my son.
Yeah.
They both had red hair. and so he would go over there and sit with her, and he was very patient. And I felt like it was a good lesson for him. A lot of conversation. Barry and I, like I said, we would talk each other off the cliff, but we would also talk to each other and focus in. You know, when you're not doing the caregiving in those rare moments, you want to be mindful of what else you're doing. Are you taking a walk and looking at nature? Are you having a peaceful dinner? Are you, whatever it is, you want to be in the moment.
Yeah. Mm, I love that. Yeah. You know, I know that you and Barry are getting ready to publish a book this coming July. I'm so excited because we've got a bunch of books behind us. They're all caregiving books. And we're JJ and I have talked about doing a book club. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you and Barry are going to need to come back to book club when you do that. And so you've got the AARP. This is in conjunction with them. Caregiver Answer Book. Give me the spiel and tell me what it is.
Because it's different.
It's different.
It's than, not just a book.
It's not just, it's a magic. It's magical.
It is all of the questions that we can remember that everyone's ever asked us about caregiving, mm-hmm. when we've in our client work, with our neighbors and friends at a barbecue, mm-hmm. walking down the street. Wait a minute, Julie, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Or even when we presented in the past on previous books, mm-hmm. every question that people ask us, so that if you're a new caregiver, you open this book and you flip to, I need to understand the finances. I need to understand how to talk to a doctor. Mm-hmm. I need to know how to set my home up because mom is moving in.
Exactly.
And it's all there. All the questions, all the basic and somewhat advanced questions that caregivers have, we hope we covered as much as
possible. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I'm going to interrupt you. Moo. Is this a caregiver book for just aging, or is this a caregiver in general? So if I had a loved one that was chronic illness, complex illness, SMI, I say SMI, SUD, I apologize, because that's my lingo for healthcare, substance use disorder, serious mental illness, and aging. Is this an intellectual disability, or people on the spectrum, individuals that have disabilities or different abilities? Is this a book that is a good question for caregivers of all shapes and sizes?
There are lots of questions for anyone who is a caregiver. Mm-hmm. There are chapters. There's a chapter on dealing with someone with dementia. Mm. There's a chapter on dealing with spousal caregiving. There are you know, various things that might not apply if you have, let's say, an adult child.
That's
who.
Right.
But a lot of other parts of the book do. The financial part does, the preparing your
Yeah.
home day. Just the self-care chapter certainly applies to every caregiver. So yeah, for the most part, it's for anyone.
Well, and I think, Jade, the reason I asked that question is because people think of AARP and they think of senior. And I want to make sure that people don't see this as this new resource and think, oh, that's not really me. That's not my situation. Because I think there's a lot of golden nuggets that you're going to be able to take away.
But and I just want to touch in because we got the preview of it and a little computer. And I just want to say to go along with it, it really is. It's like the Bible. You know, you got that concordance. Like, if I'm going to murder mom today, oh, let's go and, you know, figure that out. Oh, if I need to make a meal, oh, let's look at the bread and wine section. There's my laughter for the day. Okay.
I love that.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. I also want to make sure you guys have other stuff out there.
Oh,
A lot,
yeah.
like we said, meditations for caregivers, love and meaning. And the articles that you publish, I just cannot give you enough kudos. If you're not part of it, Barry, some of the articles that both you guys do are just so helpful and they're short. It's kind of like the answer book. You're a caregiver, you have minimal time, you just need a perk. These are the things that you guys do just that are
Thank
just
you.
inspiring.
Yep.
So
I'm going to
thank
say
you.
thank you from all the caregivers because we read them, we share them on our social media. So you guys will have seen probably Barry is very publishes a ton of articles. And so we shamelessly share them because the reality is there's lots of great resources out there and you should read them all. Like read like find the resources that work for you. Not you won't just find one thing from one person. Like we love that you listen to the podcast, but we also have lots of other folks that we're like, oh, listen to this person or go to this website. This is awesome resource because this is where we've learned. And I think that's so important. I'm going to finish this up with the very last and most important question because Julia probably knows what the question is because she's listened to Barry's podcast. But Julia, what is your favorite guilty pleasure? What is the thing that you love to do just for yourself?
I love to read, so maybe go up and read and not have any limit on it. Like not just an hour, but whatever amount of time I need.
Do you hide and read? Like, do you take like tea or coffee? I always want to ask that. Do you have to get, do you have a space?
Spaces, yes.
You know,
Have my green tea, actually.
go. Yeah,
Yeah.
I get prepared to read.
This comes in. Yeah, JJ does. She is. I have her red chair on loaner, but while she's building her house, and I keep telling her that the beagle and I have decided we're keeping it, and so
It's
she'll
my
have to
reading
get
chair.
somewhere else. But it is the most comfy chair, and I just love sitting in it. And my husband will come and visit me in my office, and he'll sit in it. Like that is the conference chair that we like when we have discussions. You know, I think it's so important. When I always say, "What's your favorite guilty pleasure?" That is code. It's another way of saying, what is the thing that you do for yourself? It is self-care. And I hate self-care because people, it feels like overused, like collaboration is overused. And, but this is truly about health and wellness. And that reading is pouring into yourself because it's stimulating and it brings you joy. And so for me, I always say your guilty pleasure is the thing that does bring you joy and you should take some time for yourself.
And
Julia.
you should feel guilty about it.
No, that's what makes it such an ironic statement. So, Julia, thank you so much for being with us. You are so wonderful. We love you as much as we love Barry. So you are now officially a sister.
Yes.
And because everybody has no free will.
That's
You're
exactly
a
right.
sister whether you want to be. And actually, I'm going to have Julia come take care of me and Jason. I'm like, Julia, I'm going to need you to help manage
Don't
me because I feel like I might be a little helpful
do
every
it,
now and
Julia.
then.
You've been warned.
Thank you so much for having me on. This has been a joy.
Oh, thank
Absolutely,
you.
guys. Thanks so much for listening in. And until the next time, we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on this week's confession. Thank you so much for listening in on UK Health Radio. But before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the Confessions show. Don't forget, visit our website to sign up for our newsletter and connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Twitter. You'll also find the video recording of all our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel. We'll see you next Tuesday when we come together to confess again. Till then, take care of you.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.